حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، إن الدين عند الله الإسلام. صلوات The subject of these nights is understanding Islam. And yesterday I had explained that Allah defined Islam in seven ways. At first he says Islam is deen. It is a way of life. And then after that Allah speaks about Ibrahim and says that he is Hanifan Muslima. Meaning Islam here is defined as fighting against batil and falsehood. Then, when he speaks about Ismail and Ibrahim building the Kaaba, there he defines Islam as building the house of Allah. And then, when he speaks about the sacrifice Ibrahim gave, there Islam is described as sacrifice and sacrificing your children for Islam. When he speaks about the life of the Prophet and what the Prophet said, that inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen, that my life and my death are for Allah, that Allah defines Islam here as your whole life's service to Allah. When Allah speaks about the person who is making dua to Allah and says, "Wa aslih fi dhurriyyati," here Islam is in the meaning of being concerned about the spiritual welfare of your children. And then at the end Allah speaks and says, فَتَوَكَّلُوا إِن كُنْتُم مُسْلِمِينَ, that trust Allah if you are Muslim. So here Islam is in the meaning of trusting Allah and relying only upon Him. So as we see that in all these definitions, Allah is making sure that we understand that Islam is a complete way of life and a complete being that has come down for all aspects of our life. Obedient, here, one more thing I will add before I go on, is that the laws Allah sent, the deen that He sent, and the practices that He sent for us, these amal, these actions that He sent for us, it is not just enough doing these things. Praying fasting, Hajj, homes, zakat, all the actions of Islam, just doing them is not enough. In all these things, you see that Allah put a condition. And He said that if these things are done with the intention of qurbatan ilallah, of seeking nearness to Allah, then these actions of yours will become ibadat. Otherwise, if you pray, but your intention is not qurbatan ilallah, if you fast, but your intention is not seeking nearness to Allah, if you go for Hajj, and Hajj is one of those things that, you know, brings about like added benefits to those who go for Hajj. Meaning if you prayed, no one called you, or no one labeled you as a person who prayed. If you fasted, no one labels you with fasting. But if you go for Hajj, you come back with a title. And no matter what your name was, after that, no one remembers your name, they call you Haji. So if you go for Hajj, and you don't do it with the intention of seeking nearness to Allah, then this is a fruitless effort. So in anything that we do, that Allah wanted us to do, He put this condition there, that it must be done with this niyat in order for it to become ibadat, in order for it to become worship and worthy of being accepted by Allah. So this is something that we should keep in mind. And here, now we see that when it comes to ibadat, and I want to now just give you this one hadith and then go and relate that hadith to what I had said yesterday. And from there we'll go on. Here we see that when we speak of ibadat and obedience to Allah, because in all these laws, Allah wanted obedience. He wanted you to obey these laws. He didn't want you to read the Quran and be happy with it. He wanted you to read it and implement it in your lives and make it your life. Meaning that when I think of doing something, I see what Allah wants me to do, then I do it. When I see there's an opportunity, I see what is the view of Allah, and then I decide whether I go ahead or not. We need to see where Allah's will is and where Allah's wish is in anything that we are going to do. And here, one thing I should add is that many times, and what has happened now, because people don't want to take the time to learn Allah's will, and they don't take the time to learn the deen of Allah and the law of Allah, so they found an easy way out to know the will of Allah. Whenever they want to do something, they are mu'min. So now, instead of learning what is the will of Allah and what is the wish of Allah, and to see where Allah's will lies in any aspect of our lives, instead of going and learning the books, we found an easy way out, right? That we call Mawlana and say, Mawlana, I need to do this, please make istikhara. And by istikhara, we think that we will know the will of Allah. And if you see the whole of Quran and the whole of hadith and the life of the prophets and the imams, where in all of this did they say that you make an istikhara to know the will of Allah? Where did they say that you go and open the Quran and see if it's good or bad? You see, understand this. Istikhara, the only place that it is written in the law, in the book of law, is when it came to marriage. And there, istikhara does not mean what we do. Istikhara is in the meaning of dua, that when you decide to marry someone, istikhara means to seek khair in something, to seek goodness in something. When you want to marry someone, make dua to Allah that Allah put khair in the decision I'm making. That too is not in that meaning. Now, here I'm not speaking about istikhara. There are places for istikhara that we do. Right? And the reason it has been given to us is for only one thing, and that is to clear our doubts when we are in a state of doubt. If you don't know what you're doing, you can't go on with your life and you're stuck because your mind is confused. So they said, all right, instead of living like that, in a state of doubt, in a state that you don't know what you're doing, make istikhara and go on with your life. It was meant to get rid of our doubts so that we can go on with our life. It wasn't meant to know what is the will of Allah and what is the law of Allah. Imagine this. So now what happens when we want to know the wish of Allah and what Allah wants in any situation, then we need knowledge in order to make sure that we do the right thing in our life. So now, when we now speak about obedience, and when Allah wants us to be obedient to Him, so now obedience now, you see, is of different types. And now we need to see what this obedience means. What this means, and what is the right way to obey Allah. Here we see that Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. He says that obedience and ibadat is of three types. There are three reasons why people worship Allah. And from here, let me begin the speech. There are three ways in which you worship Allah, in which you obey Allah. There are three reasons for it, and there are three types of character when it comes to worship. Imam says, there are those who do ibadat and worship Allah for the fear of hell. This is the worship of slaves. They worship Allah because they don't want to go to hell. They are afraid of it, and then they worship Him, they obey Him because of that. So this is the worship of slave who's afraid of a master. When he's afraid of a master, when the fear is there, he will obey him. But when the fear goes away, the obedience also stops. Now, this is one type. The second type of worship is the one who worships Allah for reward. This is a businessman. This is the ibadat of a businessman. Those who want to do business with Allah. They also have a certain type of character. And you'll see this in people when they worship, and their attitude and their ideology. You see that they worship Allah because they want reward, they want heaven. They have this reach for heaven, they want to go to heaven, and they want reward. So everything they do is based on reward. So if you tell them, let's do this amal, what's the reward for it? What's the reward for that? I don't know, 100 hajj. Oh, 100 hajj. You know, so you read this dua, And you see the reward, for example, I'm saying, is 100 hajj. So now the issue comes like this. You know, and here's where you know if these people are these type of worshippers. You will know it when, for example, like for example, here we read any dua, like the weekly dua that we read, Dua Kumail. And if you go in many places, you will see. Barna, what is the reward for reading Dua Kumail? I don't know, 2 hajj. Alright. I don't know the reward. You can go and look in the books. Right, I'm just saying as an example, you know. So don't say, you know, Morana said in the speech is 2 hajj. I'm just saying as an example to you, right? So you understand. Right? So I say that, okay, it's this much, 2 hajj. Alright. So, and we listen. Now this guy, he's reading slowly. He takes his time. And he takes 1 hour to read Dua Kumail. He said, you know, so this person comes along and says, why did you take 1 hour? Right, to read this dua. It could be done in half an hour. It could be done in half an hour. And you know what? Do it in half an hour. He said, why? Because listen, the reward is the same, whether you do it for 1 hour or half an hour. So you'll see in many Islamic centers, they have these express readers who read this express dua. Whoever can read the fastest, they say, you read it. Because we're getting the same reward, right? 2 hajj. I mean, the hadith does not say if you read in 15 minutes, it's only 1 hajj. Right? So the reward is the same. So they're doing the same. You see, this is the attitude. This is the way they're thinking. What's the way they're thinking? They're thinking that this is reward, and the reward is the same, so do it as fast as we can. Now we come to the third worship. An imam is saying that this ibadat is based on love. It is based on muhabbat, on love. And when you love someone, then the issue is not what you're getting from your beloved. The issue is spending time with your beloved. Understand this. Those who read dua for reward, they want to read it as fast as they can. Those who worship Allah because of love, when they read dua, they want it to be as long as it can. Why? Because the meaning, the reason for them doing it is to spend time with the one that they love. And when you love Allah and you're reading the dua was not meant for reward. The dua was meant for you to communicate with the one that you love. Now, if you love someone and you tell them, listen, I don't have time for you. It won't be love, right? So now, here, the issue is love. Love is ibadah. You know what I mean? Love is the spring. Love is the reason of true ibadah. So Allah wants us to obey His laws. Obedience is truly when there's love. And this is the reason why I ended the speech yesterday about the training of children by saying the first thing to train them on is the love of Ahlul Bayt. This is where you say that. This is where you know. What is the meaning of this? That is what we want to understand today. What is this love? And how do you teach love? You see, it's not a rule that you're teaching. Listen, you make wudu this way. I mean, that's easy. That's something that you do, right? But love, now how do you teach that? Listen, love Ahlul Bayt. They're like, okay, what do you mean by love? How do I do it? How is it instilled? Where does it come from? You see, understand this. And then what happens is that deen itself now, in the words of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, هَلِ الدِّينِ إِلَّا الْحُبَّ. Is deen anything but love? In other words, he defined religion as love. Love is religion. So now, we see the importance of love. Now I can mention the ayah that you all know. That even Allah asked us to love. Allah even said to love Ahlul Bayt. لا أسألكم عليه أجرا إلا المودة في القربة. Rasulullah is saying, I don't ask of you anything but that you love my Ahlul Bayt. Now imagine this. Now all these things are there, but the issue is, how does it happen? Where does it come from? How do you teach it? This is the issue. Because you see, love is something that is not an action, it's not a deed. What is it? This is what we must understand. Where does it come from? So my brothers, from here, let me explain this to you if you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You know, love or muhabbat, the basis of it, the spring of love, where it comes from, the whole idea, the love itself, it springs from, it comes from something that is called ma'rifat. It is a result of ma'rifat. It is a result of knowledge and recognition. That's what love is. That's where love comes from. You see, you are born in a family. You have a mother, father, brothers, sisters, and you look at them and you share this special bond with them, this attachment with them, this something that is called love. You love them. You have this attachment that you have with them. Now this brother and sister that you have, this mother and father that you have, this those people. Now let's say if you were born in a separate house, in a different house, and these people who are your family now were strangers to you. Would you have the same love for them like you have right now? Just imagine this and realize what I'm saying. The love that you have for your own family right now, if you were born in another family, would you have the same love? They're strangers. I mean, those people who are walking on the streets, do you have that love for them that you have for your own family? For your own brother, for your own sister, for your own mother and father? Don't. Why is it? It's just because you are in this family and you are over here. What is the reason that you have this attachment? It's not the person that you're in love with. This love that happens in a family with brother and sister, with members of the family, the reason it happens, my brothers and sisters, is because these people live together for such a long time that they began to know one another. You know this person, that's why the love grew in you. You shared experiences with him, that's why you love them. If you never shared an experience with someone, if you don't know someone, you cannot love him. You can't have that love. Yes, of course, having love for humanity is different. You know, I love humanity. But the bond is different than what you share with your own brother. It's a different thing. Just imagine this. Love is based on knowledge. When there is knowledge, when there is recognition, that's when love comes. You see, this is the reason why you see, when the Imam, when we are being told to love Ahlul Bayt, then the first method and the first thing to do is to gain ma'rifat and knowledge of Ahlul Bayt. Without knowing them, you cannot love them. Without understanding them, you cannot love them. And it is wrong to say to love someone that you don't know. I mean, for example, when you explain to your children, you should love Ahlul Bayt, they're looking, who are they? It's the same thing as saying you should love the guy who's walking the street. They're strangers. They're strangers, you don't know anything about them. You see, you don't know anything about them. How can you love them? It's only when someone knows about them, that's when you love. If you don't know them, it won't happen. And that love that those people think that they have for someone they don't know, that is not love. They don't understand what love is. You see, there are those religions that say you should love God. You should love God even though you don't know Him. And you shouldn't try to know Him, but love Him. And you're like, all right, let me try. You close your eyes and try. Love Him, love Him, love Him. You see, now you know where blind love comes from. Huh? When you close your eyes and you repeat it to yourself, let's love them. You see, that's blind love. That's not true love. True love will only come when there is understanding, when there is knowledge of that person. And this is a reason also for those who are young that they understand. You see, marriages are also not based upon love. You don't marry someone because you love them. How can you love someone without knowing them? And by the time you know someone, it will take a lifetime. So love cannot happen. Love, you see, it does not happen right away. And here when they look, they say, you know, I'm looking for my love. You're looking for your love. How would you know it's your love and you don't even know them? Imagine this. This is the reason that love comes after marriage when you start knowing one another. This is Allah's mercy that He says that He gives love to those who are married, to a husband and wife. He gives love to them and puts love in between them. So that even though they don't know each other that well, but still they will have the compassion to go on living together. And we also hear, you see, the whole concept of marriage has been destroyed. Marriage was not something, for example, that we say, I'm looking for someone who's compatible. You see, when we look for someone, the only compatibility we see that Allah said is Iman. That's the only compatibility we see. Now everyone wants someone who is perfectly compatible. And the reason this happens is because we are so used to finding and always looking for ready-made things to buy. Even in marriage also we want someone ready-made for us. Even in marriage we want someone ready-made for us. And hence that never happens because it's very hard or it's very difficult to find someone who's ready-made. And that itself, the marriage itself, is based on selfishness. You see, it is based on selfishness. Why? Because you want someone who will please you, but you are not ready to please them. Why do you want someone that you like? Right? That is all and 100% compatible with you, because you want your life to be good. Now, what does the other person think about you? That's a whole different thing. Marriages are based on giving, not getting. This is something that I want my youngsters here to understand. People here have lost the ability to build relationships. When they get married, now it's time to go and build your love and build your relationship. Because they lost that, now if any problem occurs and if any argument happens, that's it, I don't like him. I don't like her. Why? What happened? I mean, small things. Yeah, the food is too salty. I mean, imagine this. Or he snores. You see, we have lost the ability to build our relationships. So now what happens, you see, unless we don't know someone, we cannot love them. The only way love occurs is when we know someone. When we understand someone, when we recognize someone, when we have ma'rifat of someone. So now, this is true. Love only happens when there's ma'rifat, but with one condition. With one condition, that the person you want to love must also be deserving of love. That object that you want to love must also be worthy of love. If someone that you want to love, if they themselves are ugly in their character, if they have deficiency in their own self, if they are unjust, if they are wrong, if there's no righteousness in them, then the closer you get to them, whenever you find that defect, you see your love will be repelled. You cannot love something that is defective. And by defective, I don't mean in physical sense. I mean in the sense of character. That's why you see, you need someone who's just, you love justice, you cannot love injustice. If you marry someone that is unjust, then you get closer to that person, you see, wait a minute, this guy is unjust. You see, right away you will see that the bond that is growing because of knowledge will stop. You see, if I, for example, work in a lab and I test urine and I know everything about urine, but tell me, am I going to fall in love with urine because I know it? Just because I know something, I'm not going to fall in love with it. That thing must also be having perfection in it and having no imperfection in it, or having some greatness in it or some qualities in it, some virtues in it, that I can fall in love with it. Imagine this. This is the reason the heart is looking for love, and love is looking for perfection. Love can never be realized unless it is attached to perfection. Love can never be fulfilled unless it can never reach its zenith, its peak, unless it is attached to something that is perfect. This is the reason why it's so unrealistic for husband and wives to ask each other, I want your complete love. Well, if you want my complete love, then also you should have no imperfection. And if you have imperfections, it means that there will be love, but only to that extent on which you have perfection. Only to that extent, not more than that. It cannot be more than that. Because it's unnatural to love something that is ugly in nature. Injustice, dishonesty, deception, lying. When you get close to someone who lies, you see right away you're repelled. You know? I can't. Whatever it is, you see, you cannot, it is unnatural to attach yourself to something that is defective in character. This is the reason you can only love someone to the extent of the perfection that they have or the virtues that they have. So hence, our love is wandering around in the world now. It is looking for something to be attached to. Now when it goes around in the world, looks around in the world, it can never be reached to its full potential. So what can happen? The only place where love can find its real destination and real objective is when it finds someone that has no imperfection and has all the perfection, and the only one who has that is Allah. My brother, understand, the only one who has that is Allah. So now, but here, just want you to pay attention to this one point. Here, there's a technical problem. A technical problem. Again, that problem is that love is based on marifat, on recognition, on understanding. And when it comes to Allah, and understanding Allah, and comprehending Allah, there's a problem. And the problem is that Allah's being has no limits. It is infinite. It is limitless. And our mind is limited. So our mind, when it starts to understand Allah or go into Allah's being and tries to comprehend it, the mind is bewildered because Allah's limits, there are no limits, and hence the mind becomes bewildered. It is not able to handle itself. You cannot grasp what Allah is. You cannot know who Allah is. Allah's being is beyond the capacity of your mind. This is the reason Imam Ali said that when it comes to Allah, just go on the surface. Do not try to go in the ocean. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Understand this. This is the reason why. Because if you try to go and try to understand Allah, your mind will be lost. Because your mind is not made for that. It cannot comprehend that. Allah's existence is beyond the capacity of our mind. So now, the attributes of Allah, we can just have a glimpse of it. We cannot fully realize it. And Allah knows this more than us. That's why He knows that our hearts are wandering. Our love is looking for something. And Allah, because He knows that to fulfill that love, there must be someone who manifests the attributes of Allah in its perfection in human form. That's why Allah sent Ahlul Bayt with all the akhlaq of Allah and all the attributes of Allah in him to the perfection that a human can reach. My friends, the love of Ahlul Bayt is natural because they reflect the attributes of Allah. And when we try to know about them, the more we know about them, the more our love grows for them. The more our love grows for them, because no matter how much we look into them, we can never find imperfection. And that, obviously, to the extent that a human can reach. To the extent that creation can have. Obviously, the difference between Allah and Ahlul Bayt is that He is the one who gave them, and His perfection, He has it Himself, in His own being. So now, when we came to this, my brothers, and understood this point, that love is based on ma'rifat, we look for ma'rifat, we look for things, and when we find things, when we find virtues, we love them. When we find goodness, we love it. But only to an extent, to the extent that it is in that person. Now, when we look at Ahlul Bayt, that is the only place where our love can find its potential. So now, this is the reason. Now, there are some people who say, well, you know, how do you know Ahlul Bayt are perfect? How do you know that they don't have imperfections? Well, usually, to answer that, I heard that there are some who give Ayat-e Tathir and say, you see, Ayat-e Tathir is explaining that. He said, no, that's not the answer to that. The answer to that is the ayat that I read for you, where Allah is saying, love Ahlul Bayt. Loving something that has imperfection is unnatural, it cannot happen. If Allah is asking us to love Ahlul Bayt, it means that there is no imperfection in them. Otherwise, Allah is asking us to love imperfection. See that? Allah, when He says love Ahlul Bayt, it means they have no imperfection. Otherwise, it would be wrong for Allah to ask us to love something that is imperfect. So now, when you understood why I said that you should attach your children to Ahlul Bayt, this is the reason. So now, let me go on from here to another aspect of this love, if you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You know, I mean, I wanted the introduction to be a little bit shorter, but it happened. So now let me reach the conclusion. You see, one of the issues when this was said, that the people who came to the Prophet and said, we ask, what is the payment for the message you have given? Right. What is the payment for the message you have given? And Allah sent the ayat, قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. He said, there is no reward for it. The only payment for it is the love of Ahlul Bayt. Right? Now, some smart people, right? Remember those smart people in the second line? Yeah, those people. They came forward and said, because they're smart, they said, wait a minute. This is a beautiful ayat. You see, Allah wanted us to love Ahlul Bayt. And these ulama want us to obey them. So who should we follow? Allah or these ulama? These alims. If Allah said love them, so we should love them. Alhamdulillah, we love them. These maulanas come and say pray, fast, go for hajj and all these things. This is the maulanas, they're saying that. But Allah said love and we will love them. And alhamdulillah, we love them. We don't pray, but the love is there. We don't fast, but alhamdulillah, the love is there. No one can beat our love. If you could see it. Right? And since we can't see it, so obviously we don't know. Now the issue is, there needs to be an understanding of what love is. See, understand, what is love? That still is not answered. I just explained to you where you get it from. But you still need to know what is love in order that these sort of misunderstandings don't take place. You see, my brothers, Allah asks for both these things, obedience and love. He asks for both these things. But you see, there's a difference between the two. In obedience, you are asked to obey Allah when He tells you to do something. This is obedience, in any obedience. Like for example, you see, what is the difference between obedience and love? One of the differences is that in obedience, you get something in return for what you do. Like an employee and an employer. You work for someone, you do something for him, and you get something in return. And in love, you don't get anything. In love, you do, and you please the one that you love, but you don't get anything in return for it. You see, this is one difference. Like for example, if you are an employee somewhere, when you are asked to do 8 hours of work, and if you go over 8 hours, you won't get a cent. That's your own problem. That's your own time. You know, no matter how good of an employee you are, after the 8 hours over, you know you're standing right next to the time machine. Right? When it strikes 8, you're gone. Not a minute you want to stay extra. Because you're not getting anything for it. Yeah, if you got something, if you got overtime, then alhamdulillah, you'll stay there. Even if you didn't have to. right? But in love, it's different. No matter how much you do things for your beloved is not giving anything back. You see, that's the first difference. Now the next difference, understand this, and this is where I want you to come to. Next difference in love and obedience, my brothers, understand this. Let's say I have a servant who works for me. I pay him an income and he does what I told him to do, whatever I tell him to do. And then on the other hand, I have a friend, which is you. You are my friend. Our relationship is that of friendship, is that of love. Now I'm sick, I can't talk, but I need water. The servant is waiting there. He's waiting. Obediently, he's waiting. You as a friend walk in. You see my situation. You look at the way I am and you say, he needs water. You tell the servant, go get some water. You see? You told him, right away he runs and gets water. The water is given, everything is fine. Now you ask the servant, pay attention to this, you ask the servant, why didn't you get him water? The servant replies back, because he didn't ask me to. If he had told me, I would have brought him water. So now, why didn't he bring water? Why did you bring water? Understand this example I'm giving, and then I'll go on from here. Why did he not bring water and you brought water? The reason is, my brothers, that relationship is that of obedience. And obedience requires a command, requires someone to order you to do something. If the order doesn't come, if the command doesn't come, then that person who is working, who's an employee, will not do it. Only when he's commanded to, he'll do it. But in the relationship of love, there is no need for a command. There is no need for an order. You would do it even if the beloved doesn't ask you for it. Understand the difference here. In a command, in a relationship of itaat and obedience. Itaat means when you do something after you're asked. If you're not asked for it, you won't do it. But in love, you don't wait for a command. You don't wait for an order. You would do what your beloved wants you to do without them asking you for it. Understand this. In love, what happens? If you go to your wife, you know, I mean, wives, I don't know about you all, but you know, wives want flowers. They like flowers. Right? And so what happens is that you bring them flowers because your wife likes it. Now, let's say you didn't bring flowers. And your wife, after a long time, she says, when are you going to bring me flowers? Honey, I would have done it if you had just asked me to. Me? Ask for it? If I need to ask you for it, then where's the love? Don't you know me? Don't you know what I like? Don't you know what I want? It means you don't even know who I am. See, there's no love there. Love means that you do for the beloved without that person asking you for it. If he asks you, then this is obedience. Imagine, if that person asks you or tells you, this is itaat, this is not muhabbat. This is not muhabbat. In other words, my brothers, love. What is love? Love is doing that which your beloved wants, whether they ask for it or they don't ask for it. And obedience is to do what your master wants when he asks for it. This is very important to understand. If the command is not there, you are not responsible. The extent of itaat is only when the command is there. If the command is not there, then there is no responsibility on the servant. No, this has to be understood with an example. Send me a salawat. You know, you are an employee, a good employee, and you go to your desk, you have an amount of work on your desk. You see that? And you look at that work. This is your work. You have been told to do that. This is your work. And obediently you do it. And after you have done, you see you still have time. You still have time. So now, obviously, when you have time on your desk, what would you do? Now, normally you'll go on the internet. But let's say you are a good employee, a very nice employee. You'll clean your desk and this and that. Now let's say the boss walks in. He says, "What are you doing?" "I've done my work. All of this is done." The boss looks around and he says that there is another workload that's on the other desk. The boss tells you, "What about this? Why didn't you do this?" He says, "You didn't ask me to. You didn't tell me this. It's not my work. You didn't tell me to do that." Now, after this conversation, does the boss have the right to say or to reprimand you and say, "Well, why didn't you do it anyway?" You see, he can't say that. You see, he can't say that. The extent of obedience is just this. When the command is there, you are liable for it. And when the command is not there, then you are not responsible for it. So now when it comes to Allah, Allah will say, "Did you pray the 5 prayers in the day?" You said, "Yes, we did. Alhamdulillah, we prayed all the 5 prayers in the day." So now Allah cannot say after that, "Well, if you had free time after that, why didn't you make 3 more prayers? You are wasting your time watching TV and look all the time you wasted. You should have done more." Allah, "You didn't ask me to. What you asked me to, I've done." That's the extent of ita'at. Brothers, understand this. When Allah, this is the reason. Ita'at is only to that extent where the command of Allah is there. Love means that you do what Allah says and what He does not say. Love is a higher obedience. Love is more than ita'at. Love is not the name of not practicing and not obeying. Understand what love is. Love means that you go beyond the call of duty to do more than what Allah asked you to do. Not just what Allah asked you, but what He wants from you, even though He has not said it. Understand this. This is what love is. That's why you see, when it came to ita'at, Allah ordered ita'at also. Allah said, "Obey Allah." He said, "Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, atiyu allaha wa atiyu rasul wa ulil amri minkum." Obey Allah, obey the Prophet and obey the Imams. But you see, ita'at is a small part of the whole message. You see, ita'at, this ayat, are just 5 or 6 ayat among 6,000 ayat. They are just few hadiths and thousands of hadiths. So ita'at is a small part of the message of Islam. This is the extent of ita'at. This is the value of ita'at. That ita'at is a small part of the whole message. And when it came to love, Allah said, "No, love is not a part of the message. It is the price of the whole message." Understand this. It is the price of the whole message. That's why He said that the ajr of the Risalat of Rasulullah, of the Risalat of the Anbiya, of the message of the Anbiya, all of that, if you want to put a price on it, it is the love of Ahlul Bayt. Salawat alayhi wa sallam. Understand? And the reason, my brother, understand the wisdom now. Just one more point and we'll go on from here. Understand the wisdom now. Why Allah wanted love and not itaat? Why Allah wanted love and not itaat? Allah wanted love because itaat requires a command. Love does not require a command. Love demands that you do it even though the command is not there. Understand this. Now understand the wisdom. Allah knew that those who came to represent His religion and give His commands to the people, those people who came here to say that you must obey Allah and to give Allah's law to the people, Allah knew that they would be oppressed, and there would come a time when these people will be hidden from you. They will not be known by you. They will be away from you. So if Allah had said obey them, then those people in the second line will say, well, since the Imam is not here, he is not commanding us to do anything, that's why we are not doing anything. When the Imam will come back, then he will command us. Allah said, no, you have to love them. Love demands that, love requires that you obey them even though they don't command you, even though they don't tell you. Allah made love a requirement so that Islam can be alive in the ghaibat of the Imam. So that Islam can go on even if the Imam is not here. No one can say, well, the Imam is not telling us to do this, that's why we are not doing this. No, love requires that Imam doesn't have to say anything. You just need to know who he is, what he wants, and you must do it. You must do it because love requires that, love demands that. This is why Allah says, love Ahlul Bayt, not just obey them. This is why love is there. So no one can make that excuse that yes, the Imam is not here. So if he's not asking us to do anything, Alhamdulillah, now we can live our own life. No. Allah says love. Love means even if your beloved is not there, you know what he wants you to do, and you would do it. And those who do not do it, they have no clue what love is. They can say as much as they want, we are the lovers of Ahlul Bayt. But if they don't do what they say, how can they be the lovers when love is saying you should do what they don't say also? If you don't pray and you say, Alhamdulillah, I love Ahlul Bayt, what kind of love is that? Where did you get this love? What understanding do you have of love? Love means to go beyond the call of duty. This is the difference between itaat and love. Itaat, my brothers and sisters, itaat, the height of itaat, the height of itaat is to sacrifice. In itaat, you see, you ask for prayers, fasting, hajj, homes, zakat. Jihad comes way down the road. The height of itaat is to sacrifice your life for your master. And the beginning of love is to sacrifice your love, your life for the one you love. This is the reason why when love begins, that's when you say, my life is for you. See, this is the reason why you see every time those Shia of the Imams used to say, may my father and mother be sacrificed for you. This is to say that our bond is not that of obedience, it is that of love. Love begins with sacrifice. Love begins with sacrificing your life. That's why they wanted love. And this is the reason why Imam Hussein made sure that those people who came with him were there because of love, not because of obedience. You see that? On the night of Ashura, he made sure of that. On the night of Ashura, I want you to see and understand this. He wanted to make sure that their ibadat, their worship, is not based on the wrong reason. No, the ones that he collected were precious jewels. The best that humankind can offer. And he knew that these are the people who are there for love. Their ibadat, he made sure, is for the right reason. That's why on the night of Ashura when he called his whole camp and the men of his camp and put them together there, he said, if you are, I want you all to go now. You can go, you are free to go. He said, if you are here because of bay'at, because you made allegiance to me, because you made bay'at to me, if you are here because of that, then I am breaking this allegiance. I am taking back my bay'at, now you can go. And you know why he asked that? To make sure that their ibadat is not based on the fear of hell. Their ibadat is not based on the fear of hell, because bay'at, those who break the bay'at of the imam and go away, they will go to the hellfire. He said, I break that bay'at, you can go now. Now imam made sure that their ibadat is not for fear. Then imam said that if you are afraid you will not go to heaven, then let me show you your places in heaven. And I assure you as the master of heaven that you are going to go to Jannah. He showed them the places, each and every one of them. Zuhair, this is where you are going to stay in heaven. Nafi, this is where you are going to stay in heaven. Muslim ibn Asajah, this is where you are going to stay in heaven. Habib ibn Mazar, this is your home in heaven. I have shown you your homes in heaven. Now you can go. Still they did not move to show that we are not here for the greed of heaven. Neither are we here for the fear of hell. Neither are we here for the greed of heaven. There's one other reason then. There's one other reason then. Imam said after that, if you are afraid, if your ibadat is not mukhlis, it means that you worship Allah for others, then let me put out this candle so that you can go in the dark. That your respect will be saved, your honor will be saved. If you worship not Allah and you don't have ikhlas, then this is the reason I turn this light off, so to make sure that your bandagi, your servanthood and your love for Allah has ikhlas and sincerity in it. You see, even after that, nobody moved. Nobody moved after that. Imam Hussein turned back the light on. He saw that everyone was crying. Everyone was crying. And then everyone, they gave their testimony that Imam, we are not here because we are afraid of hellfire, or because we want to go to heaven, or that we worship other than Allah. This life is not worth living if it's not going to be death with you. If we are going to stay here, the reason we are staying here and the reason we worship Allah is not because of fear or greed, but because of love. Our relationship with you is based on love. And everyone gave their testimony of love to Imam Hussein. They expressed their love in words on the night of Ashura, and they expressed their love in blood on the day of Ashura. Each and every one of them. Each and every one of them, they all gathered together. They all gathered together before the battle began. These were the companions. They went on their own place. And they all said that, listen, let's leave the children there. Let's leave the children of Imam Hussein on one side. They came together and said to each other. They said to each other, listen, let's make a pledge here right now. Let's make a pledge here right now. That as long as we are alive, as long as there is blood in our veins, let not there come any harm to the children of Hussein. Let us cease to exist if any child of Hussein is killed before us. And you see, each one of them gave their lives one after another. They sacrificed their life one after another. They made sure that the children of Hussein are not going to get hurt as long as they're alive. Oh my faithful, oh the faithful companions of Hussein, our salam be upon you. If this is the ma'rifat, my friends, recognize this. If this is the ma'rifat of those who came to Hussein, those who followed Hussein, if this is their iman, if this is their love, then I just want you to now imagine what is the status, What is the iman? What is the ma'rifat of those who are raised in the household of Ahlul Bayt? My friends, the days have come that we are remembering the children of Ahlul Bayt. It is time for you to start thinking of that mother who is amongst you. And thinking of the handkerchief that she brings along with her, so that she can collect those tears. Those tears that are being shed for her son and her family. If there's anyone who lost everything in Karbala, it was Fatimah al-Zahra. Everyone gave a martyr. Those who came there, everyone gave a martyr. But Fatima gave her whole house. With how much care and how much love were these children brought up by the household of Fatima? With what care were they brought up that now the time came? That when the time came for them to show what they are made of, the world got to know who are Ahlul Bayt. They are the first one to sacrifice. They are the first one to be in the line of Shahadat. And that's what you saw in Karbala from the children of Hussein. From the children of the household of Hussein. That time came when Imam Hussein left Makkah. When he left Makkah, it was a circumstance that he left Makkah. That everyone is going towards Makkah with desires of being the guest of Allah, and Hussein had to change his niyyah to Umrah and get out of Makkah in order to save the hurmat of the Kaaba and the respect of the Kaaba. Imam Hussein left Makkah. And as soon as he left Makkah, he did not go that far. It was about 1 hour. They went away from Makkah only 1 hour, that he said to Abbas, that Abbas, stop the caravan. Stop the caravan, Abbas, and put my tent up. Abbas asked only one question. Then, Mawla, Master, do you want me to put all the tents up or just your tent? Imam Hussein said, no, only my tent. Only my tent. Put my tent up. And Imam Hussein went in the tent. And now there he was waiting. And said, go and welcome the guest who is going to come to my tent. And as they were waiting for someone to come, they saw that there was dust in the way far sky. And they saw someone is coming. And this was Abdullah ibn Jafar. Abdullah ibn Jafar came to Imam Hussein. He came in the tent of Imam Hussein. And he said to Imam Hussein, after greeting him, he said, Hussein, I am older than you are. I am older than you are. And if it was up to me, I would have stopped you from going with my own hands. But you are the Imam of the time. And Allah has given you the knowledge that is beyond mine. And I trust what you are doing. But Hussein, I just came here to bid farewell to my wife. Let me go and see her. Imam Hussein said, go ahead. You are the husband and your wife is there. Go ahead, Abdullah. And Abdullah goes to the camel where Hazrat Zainab is sitting. When Hazrat Zainab sees that Abdullah is coming towards him, and she heard that Abdullah is here, she's a bit anxious that maybe he will ask her to go back. She is anxious. So when he comes and gives his greeting and says, Assalamu alayki ya binta Rasulullah. Peace be upon you, O daughter of the Prophet. And she replies back. And before he could say anything, she says that, Abdullah, are you here to take me back? Abdullah says, far be it from me to separate you from your brother. Who am I to do that? No, that's not the reason I came, Zainab. That's not the reason I came. The reason I came is to fulfill the sunnah of Islam and the sunnah of Rasulullah. And that is that when we go on a journey, when we go on a journey, we always give sadaqah so that those who are on the journey, they will be protected from all the things that come in the journey. My wife, I ask you to take the sadaqah I brought for you. Take this sadaqah and take this charity I brought for you. He brought forward Aun and Muhammad. And he said, this is Aun and Muhammad. Let one be an offering from your side. Let one be an offering from my side. Take on the Muhammad with you. They will be with you. And offer them as a sacrifice over your brother if the time and need comes. Ajurakumullah. May Allah reward you. May Allah reward you for all these tears and all these condolences that you give. May Allah reward you for this. All I will say is this now. The training of these children who are in Ahlul Bayt is unlike us and unlike anyone else. These are people who have been raised in their household with examples of heroes in their own house. We take the example of Ali and say, look at Ali, he's our imam. Aun and Muhammad look at Ali and say, look at our grandfather. There's a difference between us and them. We said, this is our imam. They said, this is our grandfather. Look at him. There's a difference. How these people look at those people that Allah has sent as examples for mankind. Aun and Muhammad are the grandsons on one side of Jafar-e-Tayyar and on the other side of Haydar-e-Karrar. Jafar on one side, Ali on the other side. They have no deficiency in the examples that they find in their own household. But even then, being trained by Abbas, being the grandchildren of Ali and Jafar, still you see, on the night of Ashura, on the night of Ashura, Zainab knows what her own children are made of. But she still knows that training is necessary. Giving advice is necessary. And so she says, she asks them to come to her tent. They come, and faithfully, they are on their knees in front of their mother. And the mother now is giving them inspiration. And she says, my children, do you know that your grandfather is Ali, and your grandfather is Jafar? You know that any time they went in the battlefield, they always went facing the enemy, they never turn their back towards the enemy. Do you remember that? Do you know that? They said, yes, mother, we know that. Yes, we know that. He says, remember, tomorrow, when you go to the battlefield, you should make me proud of you. And do not put me to shame. You know, these children, there was a fire in them. There was a fire in them. And then Zainab said to them, I just want to tell you one more thing. When you are fighting, and by mistake, if you reach the river, and if you see the water, beware, do not drink. Do not even go near that water. Because you see, Ali Asghar is dying here. They said, Mother, they said, no, Mother, we will not go there. We will not go there. Then as she spoke to them and advised them, then when she said about the history of their ancestors and how they fought and why they are fighting and for Allah they are fighting and for the love of the Imam they are fighting. When she said this, now they said, Mother, We just want to tell you one thing, Mother. We are just waiting for one thing, Mother. She said, what is that? See, we are waiting for the sun to rise so that we can show that our grandfather is Ali and our grandfather is Jafar Atiyah. When the sun rose and the battle began, these two were at the side of Hussein, looking up to Hussein, asking Hussein every time, can we go to the battlefield now? Can we go and fight now? Can we go and defend Islam now? Can we go and defend the truth now? Everywhere Hussein is walking there with him. And then Imam Hussein is saying, no, my children, go away. No, my children, you sit down. No, my children, it's not time. No, my children, no. And as Imam Hussein is saying no to them, their displeasure, their own state is becoming such that they're becoming frustrated. They're saying, all the people are going. We don't have a chance to go. We do not have a chance to go. But you see, something happened. Something happened. When Ali Akbar's body came back, when Ali Akbar's body came back, Zainab right away, she, after crying over Ali Akbar, looked at Anu Muhammad and said, why are you still alive? Why are you still alive? Go and fight. They cried and they let their heads down and they said, Mother, what can we do? Our uncle is not allowing us to go. Zainab took their hands, walked over to Hussein and said, Hussein, this is your sister. You know your sister. Your sister never asked you for anything in life, in your whole life. Did I ever ask you for anything? Imam Hussein said, no, my sister. You never asked me for anything. He said, Hussein, for the first time asking me, I'm asking you for something. Do not say no to me. And Imam Hussein knew what this was. He could see it in her eyes. And then Zainab said, allow my children to go in the battlefield. Allow them to go in the battlefield. Imam Hussein said, looked at these children. He said, you may go. And with what heart did he say it? Only he could understand. He said, you may go. Zainab took the children in the tent. He said, come here. And then she brought out two amama, two head turbans from the chest. And she brought them out. And she put one on Aun. And she put the other on Muhammad. As she tied the turban, she said, Aun, you are wearing the turban of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Muhammad, you are wearing the turban of Jafar al-Tayyar. When these children came out of the tents, they were looking like two princes. One is the one looking like Haydar al-Karrar, the other looking like Jafar al-Tayyar. Hussein's heart was broken. His heart was melting away when he saw the turban of his father and his uncle. Hussein looked at that and said, oh, what am I sending towards them? What am I doing? I'm sending these kids, these little children, that when they were put on the horse, their legs would not reach the bridle. They could not even put themselves right on the horse. And now you see, these little children, with such fearlessness, they go and they make a plan amongst themselves. And Muhammad tells Aun, you go from the left bank, and I will go from the right bank. And they go towards the army. The people look at these children. The people look at these children and the way they attacked them, they gave them way. They attacked the people and they went to the other side. They went to the other side. My brothers, understand how these people are trained, how these children are trained. When Aun came out on the other side, Muhammad came out on the other side. Muhammad saw Aun. He saw that he was very close to the river. He shouted out to Aun. He said, Aun, get away. The river is right next to you. The river is right next to you. Remember, Ali Asghar is still in the chest. Aun came this way. And it soon happened that these people, they came around him and they started hitting them. How long can they last? They're little children. They fell off the horse. And they say, Ya Ammu Adrikni. Ya Ammu Adrikni. My uncle Alpa. And then Hussein heard their cry. He came towards the battlefield. He came towards the battlefield. When he came to Aun, he saw that Aun had already expired. He had already died. He came to Muhammad. Muhammad was still breathing. He was still alive. He was still alive. And as soon as Imam Hussein reached him, the first thing Muhammad said, "My uncle, don't worry about me. Go and see Aan how he is doing." These children, they bring these children back to the tents. They put them in the tent. Hussein goes to Zainab. Who's mourning for Ali Akbar? Who's mourning for Ali Akbar? Hussein goes to Zainab and says, "Zainab, your children have come back to the tent. Your children have come back to the tent." Zainab makes her way to the tent. And then she sits between the children. And then Hussein sees that Zainab, on her grief of Ali Akbar, is not crying for her own children. She is not crying. Hussein looks at her and says, "Zainab, I am your brother, Zainab." She still looks up at him and Hussein says, "Zainab, tell me, did I ever ask you for anything? Did I ever ask you for anything?" He said, "No." Hussein said, "Zainab, I ask you for one thing. Please, Muhammad is still alive. Put your chest on his chest and show your love for him." Zainab goes, "Yes, son." She goes, "Dear son, Muhammad," in his last breath, looks up at her and says, "Mother, are you pleased with me?"